He's the kind of man who wouldn't leave you a crumb on a plate. If City ring up this morning and say, come on then, what's the price? He will say it's X. It's not X minus 10%.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
I'm delighted to say we've got Gregor Paul of the New Zealand Herald with us this morning. Gregor, good morning to you. Good evening to you. How are you?
Very well, thanks.
We're 1 year on in this part of the world from Warren Gatland topping a poll as the worst coach in New Zealand. And we're heading back to you to find out, have things changed after after the Lions? Was there a level of schadenfreude around New Zealand, or was it kind of meh, who cares?
Probably the latter. The Lions tour passed everyone by over here, which is a tragedy, you know, for lots of reasons. It was a tour which the rugby, as you would well know, didn't really ever kind of register on any kind of scale over here. Low entertainment factor, tour hijacked by two coaches bitching and moaning about each other, and then three massively forgettable games while, you know, the All Blacks were playing at the same time. So I don't think anyone really paid any attention to it.
That's very interesting to hear, because ultimately there should be a way of selling the world champions versus the Lions, and it seems as if that has just not been capable. Is it primarily because of the quality of the rugby, do you think? If the rugby had been good, would people have tuned in, or is it that concept only really works when it's on your doorstep?
A wee bit of everything. We can't forget the world that we're living in here. You know, whether the Lions tour was going to go ahead, a lot of people here just didn't actually realize that it was going on, because people aren't used to, you know, people didn't realize that they were actually going to go to South Africa, played behind closed doors. So there's a whole kind of COVID factor going in over the top here. So it's a wee bit unfair to judge it too harshly. There was no real build-up in the tour program. That ended up being shambolic from what we could see over here, playing the same team twice, people catching COVID. So, look, it's a wee bit hard to start judging the Lions tour as a success or otherwise, and whether it's only of interest if you're hosting the Lions, if you're New Zealand, Australia, South Africa. But the quality of the rugby definitely didn't induce anyone to get up for test two and three in the middle of the night and watch them.
Fair enough.
And I think the more interesting stuff came out off the field.
Yeah.
And that ended up being a little bit embarrassing at the same time as well. It wasn't great for the game.
It really wasn't, right? And the first time Razzie did his stuff, you're like, okay, this is kind of interesting and it's entertaining and it's soap opera. And then the bit where the refereeing comes under the scrutiny. We all know the refereeing comes under the scrutiny. We've lived with Joe Schmidt. We've heard about the dossiers that he would have sent to referees. And that's fine, right? That's totally fine. You do it in the right channels. But that video was clearly designed to be made public. That was the point of it in the first place. It was, you know,
yep.
He knew it was going to be made public because he talked about the potential repercussions for this video leaking. Like, so, you know, yep. Therefore, you know what you're going to do. For me, it kind of represents a little bit of an existential crisis for the sport. If that's where we're going, then everything is fair game. And if you're in charge of the world champions, like the next time South Africa play New Zealand in a really massive game, let's say a World Cup quarterfinal, semi-final, final, and pressure is brought to bear from the South African camp, and the New Zealand camp doesn't respond in kind, if they were to lose that, the fallout for that New Zealand coach by not responding in kind, I presume, would be fairly significant, because the rules of engagement have changed by what Razzie did.
Yeah, look, and I think I don't know if you're aware, but Razzie's got a wee bit of form for this, because he actually did something not anywhere near on the same epic scale, but he did do something moderately similar, because remember the All Blacks played the Springboks in the pool rounds of the last World Cup, and Razzie went on a peculiar rant before that game, the Thursday or Wednesday before that game, effectively trying to say, look, because when the All Blacks were the number one team in the world, they were given favourable refereeing outcomes as a result of their dominance. And then at the time, I think Wales or Ireland or whoever was world number one going into the World Cup, Razzie then suggested, now that the All Blacks are no longer number one, we expect the refereeing to amend itself accordingly and not reflect the fact that the All Blacks are getting favourable decisions by being the best team in the world. And, you know, Steve Hansen called him out the next day categorically and said, that's a very disappointing public comment, because we all know that's designed to influence and manipulate the referees ahead of the game. And we just don't want to be doing that. We don't want a sport where you're right, where, and you know, and Hansen was a big gruff creature that could stand up and defend the All Blacks, but you know, why should he have to? Why should he have to respond to Razzie and create all these headlines and put yet even more pressure on the referees before the game? So look, he had a wee go at it then, and to some extent it wasn't a massive surprise that he just went nuclear on that, you know, while the Lions were there. So you're right, there is a massive issue now about how do you discipline him and how do we prevent that happening as a sort of standard state of affairs before we come into big test matches.
And I don't really know what the answer to that is. Is that a topic of conversation in across the Rugby Championship at the moment?
Well, look, we're not really there yet because we've got other issues that are bubbling away, COVID-related issues at the moment, and we don't even know. Look, the big game in the Rugby Championship, or the big two games, are going to be the All Blacks playing South Africa. And there's an added element of drama built into that because it's going to be the 100th game between the two, the first time when they play each other. But at the moment, we don't know where that game is, where in the world that's going to be played. We're assuming, it's still officially scheduled to be played in New Zealand, but we've virtually given up all hope of that happening. And it's probably going to be in Western Australia, in Perth. But then we're hearing now that the Western Australian state government said today that's highly unlikely. So like we're in a real state of where's this whole competition going to be played? So we're not really in a mindset of thinking, you know, too hard about the actual rugby side of things at the moment.
Which maybe in the long run is a little bit for the best, that actually we all get reminded that international rugby coaches or directors of rugby throwing their toys out of the pram in the context of a global pandemic. It's no harm for us all to be reminded that the outside world exists sometimes.
No, look, and that's right. And I think look, there's a real sadness. I mean, in the context of things, there's bigger things to worry about than rugby, isn't there? But in the same time, New Zealand's been COVID-free up until yesterday. Now we're back into lockdown. But, you know, the game was going to be played in Dunedin, 100th game. Already sold out in minutes. Fantastic occasion. Everyone looking forward to it. And then whoomph, taken away. So there's a real sort of rugby sadness about that, that we don't know where that's going to be happening. So when we do get a venue and we do get confirmation it's going to go ahead, I'd like to think that everybody just enjoys that fact that two great teams are going to go at each other for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll hopefully get a great game of rugby. I just hope that we don't get any nonsense.
I don't know.
But I see. But, you know, Razzie's already wanting to put himself back as the water boy this weekend. Argentina are playing and Razzie wants to get back and do all that again. And even that's a wee bit of a niggly moment. I know it probably got on Warren Gatland's chops a wee bit that Razzie did that. It doesn't feel like the right thing to do.
Well, it's being clever around the rules and titles and stuff like that. And, you know, fair enough. If that's, again, if that's going to be your culture, that's fine, you know. But don't expect the rest of us to think that it's class.
Yeah, I hope that we're moving into a world where, just to go back one step, I mean, I'm not condoning, clearly, no one's condoning what Razzie did. But I think you mentioned Joe, we've had Steve Hansen here for a long time banging the same drum. In fact, every international coach of any major team will privately tell you the same thing. Look, there is an issue, and there has been for some time now, about the quality of officiating around the world, not just with the quality of the individuals doing it, but the mixed messages that come from World Rugby as opposed to Sanzar. These guys are being confused. We get different edicts in different hemispheres. I mean, look, the game looks one way one week down here and then a different way the next week. And I'm sure it's the same in Ireland, that you feel like you're playing different games week to week. And then when Ireland come down here and New Zealand go up there, it's all changed again. So that's been an ongoing issue, but it's reached the point of crisis, I would have thought, where, look, what Razzie did, the process that he went through was entirely wrong. But I can't help having watched it. I did sit through and watch his hour-long video. But the points he were making, well, I actually had a bit of sympathy for the points that he made because he wasn't wrong with what he was saying. He was just horribly wrong in the way that he went around doing it.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I don't know if you also managed to sit through the turgid second test, but the first half was over an hour long, and that was the week after Razzie's rant. So what happens when you tell everybody that they're no good at something is that they get inside themselves and begin to doubt. So if you want to fix refereeing, telling all the refs that they're crap publicly might not be the best way to do it. There has to be an alternative to that.
Oh, look, there has to be. And I think there's a secondary serious issue here. I mean, if you're Ben O'Keefe going into that game, or you're, I can't remember the name of the Aussie bloke, was it Nick Berry, the guy that Razzie really tore apart? Look, we've got to be really careful about protecting the mental health of these guys. I mean, that's an untenable and unbearable position to be put in, where your performance is being scrutinised like that. And then the next guy following you in is dealing with the pressure. And you're right, you know, I thought O'Keefe, from what I've been told, he handled the game really, really well. But it took an hour to get through the first half because he had to kind of micromanage every decision and be certain about it. And, you know, that must have been unbearable for him. And if it, you know, what if there'd been a howler in there? Where would Razzie have gone next if that had happened?
Yeah, who knows? Gregor, are New Zealand back? Is the rugby that you're playing at the moment as good as it's ever been? Or where are you in the cycle at the moment?
Look, it's a wee bit hard to tell. They're definitely a side on the improve. They've sort of been slowly building towards that this year. They comprehensively destroyed Australia on the weekend. There was a level of fortune in there to some extent. Australia, wee bit naive, wee bit inexperienced, handed, you know, two very soft tries, one intercept and one where they just didn't defend. So you got to factor all that in. But yeah, look, they look like they're a team who are growing, who are understanding what they want to be doing. They've hardened up a wee bit. They were more direct. They were more physical. Mwanga has come in. Richie Mwanga, that is, has replaced Barrett at 10. That was a big decision, but he kind of earned a spot. And he's starting to grow and develop into a genuine international number 10. And I think getting Brody Retallick back has made a huge difference. Back fit and, you know, injury-free, niggle-free. Like, he's a superb player when he's in that kind of physical condition. And Sam Whitelock has returned to being a world-class lock at the same time. So that they've got a bit going for them at the moment. They're definitely on a path, on an upward trajectory.
Traditionally, this would be one of the years where Ireland does really well, or next year, where we're like, oh, world beaters. We haven't quite timed the cycle correct for a World Cup just yet. And that's our holy grail. In terms of the cycle, from that perspective, I presume this regime will be in situ. There's nothing that could potentially cause that not to happen. So what's the level of expectation around Ian Foster's team and what they're going to be able to achieve over the next 2.5 years?
Well, you're not quite right with level of expectation about, like, they're currently not contracted beyond this year.
Right.
And that has been a growing issue, probably more inside the team and a few outside the team beginning to get a little bit edgy about that, because there's the uncertainty about what the expectation is, about what these guys have, what the coaching team have to deliver to earn that extension, has never really been made clear. And a lot of people here are thinking, well, look, they've won the Bledisloe Cup. They're starting to play pretty well. How long are we going to leave it before we try and, you know, before we don't get these guys captured? Because there's a real danger here that some of the assistants will get picked off by other teams if they don't commit to them.
Right.
If New Zealand doesn't commit to them. But look, we'll see. There's an assumption that having won the Bledisloe Cup, that process will begin. And look, the All Blacks, the way it's going to work at the moment, and everything's in a state of flux because we went into lockdown, and in New Zealand, a lockdown means like we're only allowed out for exercise and you know, essential food. So we're back there at the moment, and the what's highly likely to happen is that when the All Blacks do leave to go, they're scheduled to leave for Perth on Sunday. They're not coming home again until December. So they're going to be on the road for 15 or 16 weeks, playing 10 test matches, 5 in Australia if they all happen, and then heading over to Europe to play, directly flying from Australia to America, play a game there, and then go to Europe to play. I mean, that's a hell of a road trip. That's old school, you know, back in the days of a 3-month tour almost.
Yeah.
And the players have made it very clear. They don't want to head off on that mission without knowing for certain what the coaching situation looks like. So we're expecting that there'll be something coming shortly to give an indication that the NZR board are going to be dealing with that before the team heads off.
And is there a world in which Foster's not the coach?
Well, look, they've got Scott Robertson, who I'm sure everybody on your side of the world has heard of and is aware of what he's done as the Crusaders coach. And look, his contract with the Crusaders has been extended. He's publicly announced he's got a get-out clause should the All Blacks job become available.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, they're putting the pressure on Foster in a way that I've never seen any other coach have the pressure put on them before. So, I mean, I'd like to think that the board wanted to put pressure on Foster. They weren't, you know, they just wanted to keep him guessing up until probably about this point of the year. And I would expect that they're going to start dealing with that now. But look, it's, yeah, there is a world. There is a world where they don't commit to him and they keep their option open to replace him with Razor.
Right. Okay. That's really interesting. Two quick final questions for you. What is Gaddy's standing in New Zealand coaching circles at the moment?
Look, hard to tell. Out of sight, out of mind. I mean, there's been a perfect storm of stuff you couldn't make up that everyone said, well, if this is what happens, then there's going to be a real issue. And by that, what I mean is he was hired by the Chiefs at the end of 2019. He was hired on a 4-year contract where he was given permission, because he'd already signed up to coach the Lions, to coach year one, so 2020 with the Chiefs, disappear, coach the Lions. Chiefs have to bring in a temporary head coach. 2022, Gatlin comes back, takes over. So what happens if Gatlin has an absolute howler in 2020? Gatlin didn't win a single game in Super Rugby Aotearoa in 2020. You know, the Chiefs lost all 8 games, had a horror season. Gatlin disappears to go with the Lions. New coach comes in. Chiefs make the final and are a completely different team under the new coach. 2022, Gatlin's going to come back, bump the coach back out and take over again. And that's a sort of crazy contract. That's not Warren's fault. The Chiefs signed off on that, which is just nuts that they did it. But there'll be a bit of angst about why that's being allowed to happen. And the fact that the Lions have had a horror show as well has not really made anyone think, you know, why have New Zealand Rugby gone out on such a limb to grant such an incredible contract to this guy? Doesn't feel right.
Right. Obviously, they thought that it was going to be a shoe-in, and there's somebody to put pressure on everybody else in the background as well. And is there any sign of Joe Schmidt taking a coaching job? He kind of, you know, he told us he was retiring from coaching, and then he got that big gig with World Rugby, and that makes a whole heap of sense. But we always felt that at some point he was going to have this unscratched itch.
That doesn't feel like that. There's a new Super Rugby team entering the competition next year called Moana Pacifica, which will be based in Auckland, and it'll be predominantly filled with players whose eligibility will belong to Samoa or Tonga. Joe was their number one target to be the head coach of that team, and I think they tried pretty hard to persuade him. Be an exciting team to coach. There's a lot of young Pacific talent around the world, but especially here in New Zealand. Exciting, well-resourced, again, a bit of money to put it together. But Joe said, nah, not for him. Not interested quite yet. So people have tried to lure him out, and he has said no. So I'm picking that he's probably not yet looking for a coaching job.
All right. Always great to have you on, Gregor. Thanks a million. We wish you the very best in that lockdown too. Hope it goes well for you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.